Awesome to welcome Fairport High School head coach and USA basketball head coach Scott Fitch to the Basketball Podcast. Fitch is one of the most accomplished and trusted coaches in the USA basketball pipeline, with more than 2 decades of sustained success at the national, grassroots, and high school levels. In January 2025, Fitch was named head coach of the 2025 USA Basketball Men's U16 national team, a role in which he led the program to a 6-0 record and the gold medal at the 2025 FIBA U16 Men's AmeriCup. He was also selected a court coach for the 2025 USA Men's Junior National Team April minicamp in San Antonio, continuing his long-standing involvement with USA Basketball's elite development pathway. These appointments represent the latest in 20-plus coaching assignments with USA Basketball. Fitch has also been the head boys basketball coach at Fairport High School in New York since 2001. Fitch has been honored 5 times as the Monroe County Coach of the Year, twice as the Section V Coach of the Year, and twice All Greater Rochester Coach of the Year. He led his team back-to-back Section V championships in 2006-07 and to the state Final Four in 2007. In 2016-17, Fitch led Fairport to a 22-2 record, a section title, and the state championship game.
Hey, coach, a brief interruption of our podcast. You know the best player development is coaching development. So let's work together to get your entire basketball organization or program unparalleled expertise and access to Basketball Immersion's group memberships. It's affordable and your players will thank you. Contact us today, basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Get your coaches full access to our extensive coaching video library, detailed courses, and modern evidence-based coaching ideas. You can have proven coach development at your fingertips for all of your coaches. Elevate your coaches, elevate your teams, get started now. Basketball Immersion Group membership is where innovation meets excellence. Contact us today at basketballimmersion.com contact page, or DM us on X or Instagram. Now back to the podcast.
Coach Fitch, welcome to the Basketball Podcast.
No, thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Honored to have observed you coach a few times now, and many things stand out. And we'll bring this up in the conversation to help other coaches. But one thing that stands out is I know part of your position that you do outside of basketball coaching is that you speak to high school students, you speak to students at different levels about social media, about leadership. And to me, that stands out in your coaching. When I've seen you do video presentations, when I've seen you talk in practice, it seems like that carries over a little bit. Talk to us a little bit about how those things connect.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I started speaking because I had a couple of my players that were getting hurt in their social media world, and I saw the impact it was having on their lives, and I just started having schools ask me to come speak on it, and so I became passionate about it. But I think the speaking, it helps you in every facet of life. It gives you a comfort level in front of people. It makes you really choose your words wisely. I think when I coached before I started speaking, I probably used too many words. I wasn't concise, and I think when you do that, you lose people. And so I definitely feel like it's helped me with my verbiage, and I think also the kids connecting with what I'm trying to say to them. I think it's helped me meet them in their world a little bit better.
And for me, having spoken, we spoke of this about this briefly, but like speaking a lot obviously improves your speaking, but it makes you more aware of what you're saying because the more you speak, the more you're aware of what you're saying. And I love that you just connected that to your players, like the impact that what you're saying is actually having, because ultimately that's the goal.
No question. And our kids these days, if you study the generation that we're in, they don't have a large attention span. Like it goes quick. So we got to get in and get out as coaches. And I think it's really helped me with that. It's helped me be more to the point. And I think it's grabbed the kids. I think they connect much better.
You use the word connect, and I know connecting is a big part of kind of your philosophy. Let's start with your whole program first. Talk to us a little bit about connection relative to your whole program.
We're lucky. We have three modified B teams, just 7th and 8th grade, two freshman teams, one JV, and one varsity. And I don't go out and recruit kids. I can't do that. I'm at a public school, so I got to coach what I have. And I think the more you connect your program, number one, it's more enjoyable. Number two, you make a bigger impact. And I think it directly impacts success. For instance, on Saturdays, I run practice for all my modified kids. So I'll have 80 kids in the gym and I'll run the practice. And not only do I get to know their names and get a feel for who they are, and they get a feel for me and my energy, I also, through the week, will be going to the games of the modified. I'll see what we need to work on, and then I can teach that. And my coaches will hear me teach it and my words and how I like to teach it, so they can be extensions of me. And then the other thing is, the longer I'm alive, the more I want to be around special people and people I enjoy. And so after games, we go out as a coaching staff and we connect. And I think anytime I can do that, I think, again, it connects the whole program, but it also makes it more fun. And then the last thing I would say is, when I've spoke to other coaches and at conferences and clinics, I'll ask them, if I pull a seventh grader over and I ask him what's important to you, if he can't tell me, then you're not connecting your program very well. If I ask a parent of a freshman kid, if they don't know what's important to you, then we're not doing a great job. And I think for you to be successful in your community, I think they've got to know what's important to you, and you got to make sure you're communicating that at a high level.
I love this topic. And I feel like, again, part of your job is sales. Part of my job is sales. And I feel like that's the sales component that I don't feel coaches do enough of. And that's selling your philosophy, selling the why, and selling that. And I just talked about this with an NBA coaching group the other day with some youth coaches in the NBA pipeline. And it's exactly that. How much time do you have to spend selling what you're doing? So, top to bottom, everybody understands.
Yeah, and I don't even, and I agree with you. I don't think of it as selling because it's something that I believe in. It's who I am. Like, I wear it out there. Like, this is who I am. And if you don't agree with it, we can talk about why, but then we got to agree to disagree. But I'm very passionate about it, but I'm also true to who I am. I think it's helped me at every level of coaching. And I would urge coaches to be who you are. A lot of times we'll go to clinics and coach will come back and try and be somebody they're not. I don't think that works. You got to be true to who you are because kids, they see that and they know that and they feel it. And if you're not genuine, I think it's harder to connect, at least in a meaningful way.
True to who you are, but also adaptable. And that's
No
part of
question.
it for what sustained you over 30 plus years of high school, so many USA basketball experiences is being adaptable, right?
No question. You have to always be willing to change. My dad instilled in me an early age that you can always learn. And I saw he was a Hall of Fame coach, New York State Hall of Fame, legendary coach, but yet every year he was still learning. Every practice you learn, every kid I interact with, I learn. And so if you're not willing to learn and change, yeah, you're especially the way the game's changing right now, my gosh, for the last 5, 6 years alone, you're going to be left behind. So I do come back to, though, the connectedness, because I think that's one thing that doesn't change. And the connectedness to me is probably what's helped me be as successful as I've been.
I'll bring up your dad now. We're going to talk about it a little bit at the end in my notes, but now is perfect. Incredible for both of you to have coached at the same school, going on about 60 years now, and he still comes to practice. That's got to be pretty cool for you, isn't it?
It's so cool. He comes to practice every day. He sits in the corner. We call him Yoda because he's the old Jedi. And when he speaks, we all shut up and listen. No, I think number one, I learned the game from him. He's a mentor, he's best friend, you name it. I think one thing that I marvel at, though, is he's been retired now for 24 years and still has the ability to connect with kids in the gym. They'll go over and sit near him. And for me to be able to share that with him has been so cool. And after games, I always go out with him. I can't believe I'm still sharing it with him. And then on the USA level, he's come down to a couple of camps and just feel very blessed in many ways for that. But it's something I cherish every day.
I love that. And no doubt he's so proud of you as well. And just a beautiful experience. And you mentioned connecting. One of the other things that is hard to connect with is the players that don't play as much. And you've had this experience with elite players and you've had this experience with high school players. So help us understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, I think it's hard. It's hard when you're not getting playing time and you're putting in all the work. And my high school team will film the bench. At USA, we film the bench. Like, we see who's connected, who's cheering for each other, who's really engaged and who's not. And we expect everybody to be engaged. And I think part of our role as a coach is to pour into every kid. Just because he's 12th man doesn't mean I don't pour into him. Like, he's got to feel that connection. If he doesn't feel that, then why would he be connected? Why would he pour back into us? I have a kid this year on my high school team. He's the 16th man. He plays in practice and he asked me if he could not suit up in games because he wants to keep stats because he thinks he can impact our team better that way. Think about that. A kid that wants to bust his butt in practice every day and doesn't even want to put on the uniform. He would like to, but he understands that he's going to impact us bigger in the analytic world. And he gives me real-time analytics at halftime. That stuff's just special. And I think number one, you got to have the right people in the right places to fit those roles. But then number two, we got to communicate at a high level and pour into them. I'll have a couple practices a year that I will send my top six guys. We'll do shooting drills and I'll send them home and I'll practice with my bottom eight. And my thing is, I want them to know, I want them to get better. I don't even want to see the top six. I want to pour into them. And I think doing little things like that, they help the buy-in, but they also help the season be successful. If those kids are not improving, then we're not improving as a team because they're not pushing the starters the way they need to push them. And so I just feel like it's something I'm very passionate about, but I also think it dictates our success and our happiness, whether it's at Fairport or whether it's at USA. And it's, I think one thing, it's hard to be that guy, but yet that guy dictates a lot of our success.
I love that. What a practical example that is as well of something that we can all do. So intervention-wise, if there is an issue, if there is some questions, say from parents or from players, how does Scott Fitch handle that?
When I started with USA about 10 years ago, I got reminded the value of truth. And it's interesting because at that level, you've got these kids that are so special, but a lot of them don't have people that are telling them truths. They all want to be in their inner circle when they make it to the league, and they're willing to lie to them because they want them to transfer to their high school or they're an AU coach, and they feel like they're competing for them. And at USA, we get a chance to be real. We get a chance to tell that kid exactly what we're seeing and feeling. And I'm not trying to gain anything. And when I left my USA experience for the first time, I got reminded that those tough conversations are where growth happens. That's where we get better. And so if I have an issue at Fairport, I'll talk to the kid. I'll be very upfront. I'm not a coach that doesn't talk to parents. A lot of coaches say, I don't need a parent festering in the crowd for 4 months and just killing me and killing the team and hurting their kid. That just doesn't make sense to me. So I'll bring them in and I'll let them vent. I'll let them share what they're feeling. And then I'll tell them why I'm doing what I'm doing. I'm well thought out. Your kid's not playing because of these reasons. It happens in practice. That's where you earn our playing time. And then if they don't see it, we agree to disagree. But at least they had a chance to share their side. And at least they know where I'm coming from. And I feel strongly enough in what I'm doing and why I'm making decisions that I'm making that I feel very comfortable doing that now. And maybe as a younger coach, that might have been hard to do. But now I'm very at peace with that and I'll welcome conversations. I'm very proactive with my kids. I had my team rank 1 through 16 this year because it's a great exercise when you have playing time concerns. There's certain teams that have that. And my top six are very clear. And then after that, I had seven guys vote themselves number seven, which tells me I've got to go talk to seven guys because one of those guys is ranked 13th by the team, but he's visioning himself number seven. And so I'm proactive on that. And then I'll go talk to the kid and we'll talk about why.
He's just trying to manifest, coach. He's trying to manifest. So
Exactly.
that's
Exactly.
such a great example of kind of practically getting it out in the open. And as you said, having these honest conversations. And you referenced doing some of those different levels in your gym on a Saturday, too many kids, too small space, that type of deal. That really does help shape your understanding of maximizing time on task, doesn't it? And getting them to be able to maximize the activity time.
No question. No question. And we do it at USA. You've seen this. We'll have 65 kids in a gym and four baskets. I don't like kids sitting around. We want to get better. Every minute I'm in the gym is planned. Like we're getting after it and we're moving. And yeah, so I think the planning preparation is really important for any coach. It doesn't matter what level, whether it's 8-year-olds or whether it's the NBA.
Impact winning is something that comes across a lot when I hear you speak at USA and it's on your practice plans. How can people impact winning? So give us an understanding of kind of within a high school setting, maybe first, it's obvious the best player, how they can impact winning, but how do you help these other players understand their way to impact winning on your team?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of things. Number one, they got to understand you value them and you got to show that. A lot of the stats that I share, I don't talk about points. I talk about offensive rebounds. I talk about creating turnovers and tips, like all hustle and energy plays, because that's where you're going to win and lose games, I believe. And I don't care if it's at USA or at my modified teams. Only one guy has the ball. It's been often said you play the game 95% without the ball. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, especially the way we play, because I don't want a guy pounding the basketball. So everybody's going to play without it, and you got to know how to do that. And then I think the kids, do they understand and believe that you value those other things without the ball? And if they believe you value them, then I think they're going to go after them and do them. But it's about believing in something bigger than yourself. And I feel when we teach and share the game, I think every time we teach and share the game, no matter what the drill, we highlight that. And so they know that it's very important to us.
How has coaching in short mini camps and short bursts over weekends or short team training camps to get ready for competitions improved you as a coach?
Yeah, it's really challenged me to get things done in a quick, concise way. And again, I think it's a really hard balance because you don't want to overload them with things because you want them to play free. And so there's this fine balance. And I feel like each group is different. Each mini group is different. And I'll get in there in that first gym, in that first setting, and I'm feeling that. Can they handle more? Do we need to back off? And how do you manage that? And the other thing I think that's been amazing at USA, and it's helped me because I'm a strong believer in a culture and setting a gym that cultivates success. And at USA Basketball, we have to set a culture within 3 or 4 days, which is like so hard to do. But I also think it's made me incredibly aware of it and incredibly aware, picking my words back to our beginning of this conversation, that every time I interact with them, I have to make an impact. And I think the culture is laid every time I speak to them, and I got to make sure I'm cognizant of that.
And I can vouch for that in the sense that it's like you're not wordy in practice and you're not wordy in the meetings that I've seen. It's efficiency and effectiveness of the language. And obviously, young people value that nowadays. And I think generally all people value the fact that you're not wasting their time, you're just there to help them improve.
No question. Yeah, no question. Even in our coaches' room, and we'll talk about that. But it's in and out. I'm always in, and then I'm getting out of their way. And I want the players to be players. I want the coaches to coach. And I'm just trying to direct it and manage it a little bit. But no, and I can tell you, I think the other thing is that I cherish every minute I have with them, and I don't want to waste it. And so that's another piece, is that I just want to make it the best I can make it.
I don't know, coaches that are listening, I don't know how you create this opportunity if you don't have one, but coaching in short windows to me, which I've had the blessing of doing, actually helps you really understand as well how you decide what not to teach. And I'm curious on your end, what are some things that you've decided that, look, these are the most important things? That's easy to say. Everything's important in coaching, but these are not as important.
Yeah, I think before we start a window, I'll make 5 bullet points to me that they've got to have when they leave here. And so, regardless of what I'm teaching, those 5 bullet points have to come across, and they have to have that. I used to teach when I started. We used to run a ton of plays. We would 5-on-0 dummy plays, and so much teaching was like done on these plays and patterns. And great, a kid can run a pattern, but he doesn't know why. He doesn't know why he's making that decision or why we're making him run from block to block. So I think the way that we're teaching the game right now is, number one, it's more fun. Number two, I think it's better, and they can translate it to whatever facet of life they go to, whatever area of basketball. But you are right. I've cut out a lot of the patterns. I've cut out a lot of the drills that didn't connect. Like every drill we do has to be built on something and has to lead to a higher goal. So I've looked at all our drills, and if a drill that I was just doing to do a drill because I thought it was good, but it didn't go anywhere, that's out. Everything's got to connect, and it's got to build.
I feel one of the greatest compliments I can give you in USA Basketball is from 1 year to the next, it wasn't the same. And I think it's easy when you're as dominant as you guys are in certain age groups to say, oh, we can just do the same thing.
Yeah.
And in some respects, culturally, it's maybe the same. But from year to year, your practices were quite different. And when you say let them play a little bit more, you're talking about letting them be more conceptual, structured upon structure, right? Can you frame that a little bit more for people?
Yeah, no question. Yeah, there's no question that that's the case. Yeah, we do a lot of teaching through playing. We want reps. We want to let them be them. So a lot of 4-on-4, a lot of 3-on-3. And I'll never teach the game a different way, I don't think. I've been blessed to teach the game for now over 30 years, around 30 years. And this is the most fun I've had coaching, is letting them play, letting them learn. You got to create an environment that allows them to make mistakes so they can feel free. And then when they make the mistake, we talk about why so they can learn, so then they can build on it. But I love them learning while they're playing, as opposed to just teaching or making them scared to make a mistake or scared to be them. The other thing is, and I think you've seen this in at USA, but I want a gym where they have a voice. Like, I want my players to talk to me. Like, I want that interaction. I think that's where your IQ grows. So I think those are a couple of things, I guess, that I would go to.
And part of giving them the voice is holding space for them when you ask them questions. And you do that very well. And I feel your coaches do that very well. That it's not just like this rhetorical, what do we do in this situation? And then answer it for them. There's actually the moment where they get a chance to think and they get a chance to safely answer.
Yeah, one of my favorite parts of this last camp, and I think you had left, I blew the whistle and stopped it. We had three short courts going, 5-on-5 short courts. And I called them all in and said, blue's up by 3 points. White has the ball, 15 seconds. You got a 30-second timeout, no fouls to give. And I sent them all back and I gave the clipboards to the players and I let them draw up their plays. And what a great learning moment. Number one, you see who the leaders are. You see what they come up with conceptually. You see who has a brain, right? And then after it happens, then you talk about it. Like, why'd we do this? What happened? And it was one of my favorite parts of camp when it was player led. I made the coaches not talk, which is hard for us coaches, but it was also a great moment.
Tremendous to be able to empower the players in that way. And I thought one of the other things that you said this year in the initial meeting was that you told the players that you had visited NBA practice, which wouldn't be abnormal, really, in a sense, for a coach like you. But what you did is you said, one of the reasons I visited them was to be able to help me understand what you guys need more or what you need to be at that level. Because clearly that's the goal of many of those players. And I thought that was really a sit up in the seat, a little bit extra moment for those players.
Yeah, I appreciate that. One of our goals at USA is to prepare them for life. And a lot of those guys are trying to make the NBA. And I want to make sure what we're teaching at USA is relevant and that it carries over. And so I went to a couple of the teams I respect a great deal, and they were generous enough to let me in their meetings. And it reaffirmed that what we're doing, I think, is carrying over. And that's what one of the things we're hoping to do. And I want the guys to know that we're invested in them in that to that level. And I agree with you. I think they really took that to heart.
Puncture threes. Talk to us
Yeah.
about that because I took that phrasing away. I enjoyed that phrasing a lot. And then you added a little bit of value to that as well with some of the percentages.
Yeah, over COVID, we all broke things down. One of the things I've been very interested in shooting, one of my college teammates would say, I like to shoot the basketball. They probably think I took too many shots, but I study the shooting. And I was looking at ways that we can increase our shooting percentage. And one thing that we started noticing was any inside out three, we were shooting a higher percentage. So we started statting it, and we stat it to this day with USA and with my high school team. And we shoot about 25 po points higher from puncture threes. A puncture three is a three that we shoot where the pass is coming inside out. We also include skip passes because that's stepping into it. And it makes sense, right? If you think about it, anytime we shoot in practice, usually the rebounder's under the basket. It sets up our base and our balance very well. So there's reasons why it happens. However, when you start to look at it and you start to look at your offense and stat one of your games and see how many non-puncture threes you have and look at the percent, it starts to become very clear that puncture threes are a way that we can increase our shooting percentage without changing anything else, without changing better shooters or becoming a better shooter. It just that alone would raise your percent about 25%. It's hard to not hunt puncture threes.
Love that. Great connection for all of them. Hey, coach, a brief timeout from the podcast to bring you the Analytics Minute, sponsored by Hoopsalytics. How do you decide who your biggest impact players are? Traditional stats don't tell the whole story, which is why high-level pro and college teams rely on analytics systems like Hoopsalytics to make data-driven lineup decisions. Examining team stats when a player is on the floor tells a more compelling story. For example, you can use net points per possession to determine your best two-way players, as well as your offensive and defensive stars, or use the team rebounding percentage for each player to see who has the biggest impact on rebounding. The results may surprise you. Hoopsalytics brings the most powerful analytics to teams of all levels. It's easy to use and affordable. It's like AI for basketball coaches. Discover how Hoopsalytics can help you make better data-driven coaching decisions. Visit Hoopsalytics.com/ball. That's Hoopsalytics.com/ball today to learn more and start analyzing your games for free. And then the other phrasing stood out to me was negative outlets. Can you bring that to life for everyone?
Yeah, everybody talking about pace. When we want to play with pace, I play with pace in my high school and also USA. A negative outlet is an outlet where a point guard or an outlet guy is running back to the basketball. And when you do that, you're obviously slowing your pace way down. And so when you looked at Indiana last year, they were great at outletting up the floor, and Haliburton was great at the next pass, passing ahead without even taking a dribble. And that creates pace. When everybody's talking about pace, it's a huge conversation. I like to coach pace. I like to play with pace. And so if you have a guy that's a negative outlet guy, which is your old school point guard that runs back to the ball and takes a step or two away from where we're going, he's slowing us down. And I don't want to play with a point guard like that anymore.
And you don't have to at USA because you have multiple ball handlers and multiple players that can do that. Is it
Correct.
harder at the high school level when you, as you said, you don't choose your players, you have to develop them?
Yeah, no, I don't think it is. Like last year, we had a point guard that was, he was an elite player. He's one of the best that I've ever coached. And we ran things through him, but we got him down the floor because we educated him that getting the ball ahead to him downhill before the defense is set, that's very appealing to a point guard that likes to get downhill. The other thing is we introduced boomerangs where when you pitch it ahead, we'll throw it right back to him and get him downhill. So that point guard got rewarded. This year, I don't have a designated point guard, but I have four guys that can handle. So we'll catch it and we're going to pitch ahead. And now we may even be harder to guard because we have multiple ball handlers. So I don't think it is. I think you just got to educate them so they understand why they're doing it.
I love both those reasons. I use both of them, but I'm just smiling because boomerang coaches, that's the number one way to get a point guard to understand, hey, give it up, because they'll boomerang it back. And a lot of times players want to get it back to you anyways, especially once it's over half. So that's a great connection for them.
Yeah. And with the boomerang, it sucks the defense back. So it even gives them more room. And then he's downhill in the catch. Any elite point guard would love that if they understood it.
Space for speed. I love it. And coach, we've talked about it a few times, but one other thing I want you to talk about a little bit, which I feel is really important in your practices, is maximizing time on task through minimizing transition time. And I think you guys do that really well with the transitions between activities, drills, games, whatever it is, water breaks, etc. It's very minimal and it maximizes the amount of time that you actually get to physically practice.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of time at USA in particular. You got to maximize every minute you have. And I think players feed off your energy. And that's one thing I've heard people say to me about my energy. I think energy is contagious. And if they know where I'm coming from, they know I'm bringing energy, they're going to reciprocate that. And I tell them when they get a drink, you got 1 minute. Like, we're going. There's no lollygagging around. And I think once they've been through a practice, I think most of them, they love it. They're buying, they want to learn. They want to play. They don't want to sit around and waste time. So I think when they see your organization and the effort you're putting in, I think they typically, they're excited to kind of, to be a part of that. And I think then their energy raises and now you got something special. One thing I have been doing at high school, and I did a lot with USA once we get our national team, is right before we do a water break, I do something, whether it's a free throw box, it's a baseline out of bounds, it's a sideline, it's a game situation. But for me, I sometimes have tried to say, okay, we're going to work on our end of game stuff. And we do 15 minutes of it and no one takes it serious. I struggle with that. But when I've done it right before the drink time, it's allowed me to hit more, teach more, hit situational stuff. And I think it's been a really important part of my coaching, I think, the last probably 3 or 4 years.
I love that example of just being able to do things a little bit differently sometimes to keep them on their toes. And I just got to reemphasize that coaches, if you don't tell players when they go get water, et cetera, just make up a random time. You don't even have to time it.
Yeah.
It speeds them up. It's incredible. Rather than they take that extra time and lollygag and all that other stuff. Love that example. You mentioned impacting the game off the ball. Maybe let's start with the perspective of what are some of the most common off the ball mistakes that youth players make?
Younger players, and I would say at USA, they all run to the ball. The USA guys are so talented. They're used to having the ball in their hands all the time. All of them are. It's not going to happen when we get them all together. When you're dealing with 7, 8 year olds, they all run to the ball, right? So I think trying to get them to understand the space. But again, I think you got to teach them why the space is important. And you can do breakdown drills of 2-on-2, 3-on-3, and let them play with a skip pass and either a shot or a rip and attack the closeout where they understand why the space is important. Or walk them through real quick and show them when you're in the corner how that drags your defender to the baseline. And every time you come up, you shrink the court on your offense. So giving them that visual. But I think visuals, and then I think letting them experience it and feel it. And again, I don't care how old you are, you can make up a drill that lets them understand it and appreciate what space means and does for them. And I think we'll do that at every level.
It's amazing how hard it is to convince players to hold a space, right?
No question. No question. It's really hard. But if you give them the ball and you let them shrink the court and they feel how crowded it is, and then you space it, they're like, that's why. And again, I think they always have to understand why you're doing something. And you got to know as a coach why you're doing something, because you've got to be able to explain that. But the space is big. And then being patient. I think every level you go up to the NBA, when you get into the scoring action or like a pin down, each level you go up, they get more patient. So trying to get them to go slow to fast and read the defender as opposed to just exchanging. And I think we've done a better job of teaching that recently, but I also think that's what makes it go. My team right now, we're playing with great pace, and we say we want to play fast, but don't hurry. And I feel like that's like a learning curve, because when you play fast, everybody hurries. Yeah, but you got to slow it down, and then we got to be very smart and very, I don't know what the words I'm looking for, but just making sure that we're using those scoring opportunities to the fullest.
Is part of developing pace initially being okay with the hurry, that naturally it's going to be a hurry, and then bringing them back later?
I do. I feel like you've got to teach them what pace feels like and then draw it back. And you can draw it back in different ways. You can settle them down. We can call an action. We can do things to settle down. We can play off 2 feet. We can give them tools to help them play more under control and with patience. But I think the pace feeling, you've got to feel it before you can pull it back. When I started this year with my high school team, I had a lot of multi-sport kids. We were getting our basketball legs. The first 4 or 5 practices, we must have had 50 to 60 turnovers. The ball's hitting the walls everywhere, right? But we had to feel that pace. And I like to get in shape by playing basketball. And that was a calculated kind of area of mine, was I was going to accept all those turnovers. But now we started to bring attention to it and pull them back. Now what we do, after every game, we'll watch every turnover and see if there's consistency so we can work on them and keep limiting those turnovers, because that's an area of focus for us. So yes, I think you got to play with pace and let them feel what it feels like. And then I think it's easier to draw them back than to go the other way.
Your defensive language. Consistently, I hear you talk about multiple efforts and make them uncomfortable, particularly that last part. Can you talk about us what that means to be able to make someone uncomfortable on the defensive end?
Yeah, we don't want people to run plays. We want them to have to make plays. We want to make them uncomfortable. I think about yourself. Do you like to play against a team that lets you run your stuff, or do you like to play against a team that's taking you out of your stuff individually? Do you want to be a player that can take your time, or do you want to be worried all the time? I don't want people to rest against us. Like, we want them to be uncomfortable. That's something that we take a lot of pride in, and we don't want you to be the weak link. Don't be that guy that isn't doing it when everybody else is. But I think it's something that's kind of defense at USA defines us. It's where our success comes from. And to be honest with you, it's the same as my high school team. So we take a lot of pride in that.
You reminded me of an example I used to give, which is I'd have a player sit in a chair and then I'd say, "How comfortable is this right now?" And then I'd let him sit in a chair and then I'd be pushing them and tapping them and saying, "How about writing a test like that? That would be hard." Yeah, I love that. Connected back to those different things that they experience in life. One of the challenges I know with having players that are used to having the ball in their hands is sometimes there's a deficiency in passing. And I know we've talked about that at the NBA level in terms of development overall, that passing can be developed more. But the challenge is these elite players, when you bring them together, are used to having the ball in their hands. So talk to us how you shape passing for them and some of the advantages out of that.
I think number one, they got to know it's important. So they got to know that we're looking at passing. In a film session, we'll break down passing. We broke down the stat this last time with USA, how a perfect pass and what that led percentage-wise to a non-perfect pass, one where you had to reach because it's harder to reach and get it back to your shots. What level of pride do you take in your passing? I also think that guys don't know how to feed the post anymore because we've gotten out of that, and they don't know how to throw a bounce pass to a delay guy or the entry pass. It's so funny. Like, I heard your interview with Frank Bennett about baseline inbounds. I this 1 year we scored on every inbounds play. It was crazy, right? And then the next year I run the same plays and we can't score. And why is that? Because the kid that's taking the ball out can't pass the ball. He doesn't use his eyes. Like my inbounds plays are directly impacted by that inbounder. And so that's a position I covet. If you take the ball out for me, like it's a huge compliment to you. And they got to know that. But we do a ton of passing drills, and I will reinforce it. And when we play 3-on-3, 4-on-4, the great thing about that is you can start it any way you want. Like today for my team, we were not entry passing into the post very well. So the way we started our 3-on-3 was by an entry pass. So I know I get reps. I challenge the defense to get steals every time, so it's game-like. And then we play from there. But like, you can manipulate any drill you want. When I started coaching, like I felt like I had a huge advantage because I grew up with my dad coaching for 33 years. I knew basketball drills left and right. And then I was a D3 player who had to work my butt off to get what I got. So individual workouts, I became really good at. So when I started coaching, I had the playbook, I had the drill book, and I could work them out in the off season. Now any coach can YouTube anything they want to YouTube. Like every drill is out there. Every kid that wants to be good can pay and go to an individual workout guy. So all those things now are not differentiators anymore. So now as coaches, how do we differentiate? One is by connecting with our players, is creating that culture piece. And then the other thing is seeing what your team needs and meeting the needs. And so passing is one that's a huge one. If you can't pass the basketball, doesn't matter what you do, you're in trouble.
How do you evaluate defensive success, particularly in practice, when the offense is obviously designed to score? Clearly, we're playing with more pace on offense. You're trying to score faster on offense. So, what are some ways that you evaluate defensive success in practice when the offense is designed to score?
Yeah, just because the offense is designed to score, we're still stopping people. We're still being a whole, like a lot of times when I do drills, I'll have one coach the offense and one coach the defense. So we're never like resting on D. They're still trying to make him uncomfortable. We're still boxing out. We're talking the whole time. So how do I judge it? One is, can I hear them? If I can't hear our defense, then I'll stop the drill. It doesn't matter what we're doing. Like we're not us. I don't think you can play defense at a high level if you don't talk. What's funny is I had one time, I had a kid, I said, try and talk really loud and not be engaged on D. Like you can't do it. Like when you're talking, you're engaged. So one is I can hear my defense. Number two, I can see if people are comfortable. If they're comfortable, then we're not doing it well. And then number three, it's just effort. Are we flying all over the floor? Are we diving on the floor for loose balls? And for me, I think those are like the quick assessments, no matter what drill we're in, that you can look at it. And you know if it's there or not there. If we're not playing hard defensively, then we're not getting better offensively. Like, you can't have that. Like, my practices are ultra competitive. It doesn't matter what we do, we are competing. And there's a winner and there's a loser. And at the end, we'll pay a penalty quick and then we go right to the next one. But I want competitive kids. And if I want my offense to truly be good, then we got to compete defensively in that drill, like, regardless of what it is. And you know what happens at the end of the whistle? We all slap up every single time because we respect the heck out of each other. I'm not going to leave that gym with us not connecting and slapping up. It's just not going to happen. And it's the same after every single drill we slap up because we have to have a high level of respect for each other. We're making each other better.
Yeah, that's great. And I see that culture on display in your practices all the time. And you talked about the rise of the robot player a little bit, referred to it a little bit here, but robot player, they're used to doing exactly what they're told and they don't have the creativity. They don't have the ability to be able to play, kind of as you said, conceptually. You're getting a lot of players
Yeah.
coming up through a youth system where they literally are trainer, rep the drills, play. With
Yeah.
very little structure, very little coaching, very little accountability. And then they're used to saying, hey, just tell me what to do and I'll go do it. What do you think is driving this trend? And then what do you do to counter this trend as a high school coach?
Yeah. When I first took over, I felt like we had that. My dad was very organized. Very play driven. And I felt like kids were running from A to B and they didn't know why. And so early, this 24 years ago, I'm like, they got to at least understand the why as to what we're doing. And I think that the robot player, I would feel if I teach a robot player at Fairport, I'm not helping them be successful down the road in basketball. Like, it's not going to translate. And I think the same thing at USA. We can't have robot players at USA. If so, they're not going to be successful in the league. I think the robot player just, I think they're becoming extinct, I hope, because they don't have IQ. Basketball is a reactionary sport. The defense is never the exact same way twice down the floor. There's always different parameters. I get asked from our NBA scouts all the time, right? Like, I get a lot of calls on our USA guys. And it used to always be, are they competitive? Are they competitive? And they still ask, are they competitive? Because that's a separator, I think, at that level. But now what I'm hearing more and more is, do they have IQ? Do they know how to play? Can they react? Can they learn? And if those guys are asking me that question, it's telling me the importance of it and that we got to create that for those USA kids. But even all the way down to my kids at high school or even in junior high, I think there's a reason why, you know, and that I think robot player just isn't going to be successful anymore. I know, I'll tell you this, I love coaching against a robot player because I'm going to disrupt everything that kid knows what he's doing, right? And if you're a robot player against us, I think you're in trouble.
I was going to ask you a little bit about some of the feedback that you get on different things. So I'm glad you brought that up. But maybe let's go deeper on those two things. First of all, what does make a competitive player? What, in your mind, when you see two players at an elite level, what distinguishes one from the other when it comes to competitiveness in your mind?
We coach Jalen Suggs in U16, U17 out in Argentina. Jalen Suggs was so competitive that we had to almost have a trainer watch him because we were afraid he was going to work himself to exhaustion. That's competitive. So I've seen competitive. So now I come back and I get this other kid that thinks he's competitive, but he doesn't try hard at everything. He's not always trying to win whatever drill it is. He's not diving on the floor. It doesn't take long to like sense whether a kid really wants to win a drill and really wants to get better, or if he's just doing it for show. For me, obviously, I want to coach those Jalen Suggs. Those are the kids that are difference makers. When Jalen Suggs enters the gym, changes. When Isaiah Stewart entered the gym, you knew that if you weren't going to play hard, like he was coming after you. And I want guys that change the gym. Those guys are special. Like I started or I said before, I want to be around special people. Like, those are special people. That's who I want to coach.
For the players that aren't that yet, what can we do to help them get there?
Yeah, I think number one, try and find out what's important to them. Try and connect with them. I had one kid that wasn't playing really hard for me probably about 6, 7 years ago. And I remember going to a tournament and we played in one game and we were staying overnight and he didn't play hard. At least I didn't think so. And that night I called him down. And I was just like, Colin, you know, what's going on? And we had a probably like a 25-minute conversation. And the next day I came out and we played in a game and this kid played so hard. And I was like, that's unbelievable. So on the way home on the bus ride, I'm like, Colin, what changed? All of a sudden you got it, man. Like you played hard. And he said, Coach, man, I just got reminded that you care about me last night. And he's like, I'm not gonna let you down. And I was like, damn, like that's what it took for that kid. So I might be a broken record on the connectedness, but I've seen what it does to kids. So I think one is that what motivates them, and then try and jump on that. And then the other thing is making sure we're putting them in competitive situations that allows them to be competitive and learns. But maybe they aren't. Maybe they keep getting beat for a while. At some point, hopefully they care enough that they're gonna flip a corner on that. It's hard to not be competitive in a gym where I'm bringing energy and everybody else is bringing energy. So if I'm gonna bring energy, I can't have a bad day. I got to bring energy every time if I'm going to expect them to have it. Not sure if that answered it, but I think hopefully that brings it out of some kids.
I love it. No, it's such a great example. Belonging, feeling connected, however you say it, is a huge driver of motivation. And that's proven throughout a lot of sciences. That's a great example of it. And then I know another thing that you do is you use competitive scoring systems to drive behaviors as well. Most three in a row, most USAs, whatever it may be, these different type of things. So talk to us about using scoring as a behavior driver.
Yeah, and I also like to have fun with it. We've
What was
talked
the one
about
year? It was
it.
like something about whoever makes the most threes gets a shake or something like that, I think.
Yeah, I've lost some
You
shakes since
lost a lot of money that
then.
time.
I've lost some shakes for sure. I've lost some shakes. I've gone in debt a little bit. But you got to make it fun. At the end of the day, competitive and all this stuff that we talk about, they got to be enjoying it. That's why we do it. But yeah, I'll make up a scoring system and three in a row, or I'll make them count USAs, or we have raiders at Fairport. You got to hit four in a row to get a raider. How many raiders do you get? We'll play defensive drills and have defensive scoring because we want kids to want to play defense. Sometimes we play offensive scoring, but I think, that as a coach, we manipulate the scoring system. I mean, we control that. Make the scoring mean something, have it have meaning, and in certain cases, bring in some fun with it. Let them have a little bit of fun. It's okay to laugh and be competitive at the same time.
Absolutely. And explain to everyone the USAs, because that's a cool thing.
Yeah, so we were just doing shooting drills and I was like, man, like we got to get more energy in here. And so I said, you got to get as many USAs as you can, which is three in a row. But when they make the first one, they all yell U, and they make the second one, it's S, and the third one's A, and they all A. But it gets the whole gym's echoing with USA, USA. So it's become like this really cool thing at our camps. But it's also something that I think brings out some of that pride, right? We talk about how do you get kids to compete? They got to want to play for something bigger than themselves. And we're also reinforcing the USA theme there as well. So it's been fun.
I've always felt that we form culture more in practice than any meeting or any game or any road trip situation. And that's a great example of connecting your culture and just using a word that, hey, we're going to say this word when we make our three in a row. And I thought it was awesome to be able to get it. And I think every coach can come up with something like that as well and adopt it to your program because that was such a cool thing.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It was fun. And it's funny because sometimes you dream up these things and then you do it and it's a flop. But when you're sitting in that gym and you're hearing them all yell you and get into it and they hear you yell A and they're always screaming, it makes for a fun environment. So yeah, that was pretty fun.
And it's shorter than spelling out milkshake. Much
No
better.
question. Yeah, no doubt. No, and a little bit cheaper, which is good. So that's good.
So we've got your expertise. You talked about competitiveness, dealing with elite players. So what's a separator, or what are some of the separators in your mind with the basketball IQ piece, which is the other part you brought out? So when basketball IQ, I've got this elite player, I've got this elite player, and now I can say this player unquestionably has basketball IQ.
Yeah, I think number one, just from a simple one, it's creating advantage basketball. So when we start with an advantage, like I do with 7 and 8 year olds, but what we're looking at is can they make the first read? Can they make the second read or third read? And you control that by where you start the advantage and where you position people. So one is game-like advantage kind of reads. Two, are they asking questions? Are they asking IQ questions? What's their verbiage? Are they reinforcing what we're saying? I think that's another thing. I put them in spots where they run their court, like I mentioned before, where they come up with their own play and philosophy. And then we can see what they think on that or see what they thought after we conclude that together. But for me, it's the biggest thing is the processing. It's the in-game action processing and understanding. Like when we teach puncture threes, do they know what a puncture three is? Can they apply that and implement that? Can they get in there and create a puncture three for somebody? Some guys are two and three moves ahead, and those are the guys that are special. The other guy is kind of in survival mode sometimes, and you see that. So then how do we increase that kid's IQ? Maybe we got to break it down two on two for that kid and start with basic reads and then build that kid up. Defensively, do they understand slides? Are they willing to do that? You can hear when they talk. If a kid doesn't have IQ, typically they don't talk because they don't know what to say. So then I come back as a coach. Have we armed them with enough to say? And if not, I can't get mad at them for not talking. But your IQ guys are talking. They're impacting everybody on the floor. Where your guy that's not smart or doesn't have IQ typically is in his own world. So I don't know. I went all over the place, but I feel like I'm constantly assessing that. It's not like a one thing. To me, it's I take it all into account.
Coach, another part that stands out about the mini camps and USA Basketball is how many coaches you bring into the pipeline. And it seems to be a really good development mentorship model for coaches. So, talk to us about that and the impact and some of the things that you feel are most important in terms of helping coaches develop.
Yeah, I think number one, I love it. I love mentoring other coaches, and I feel like I'm getting mentored all the time. I think at USA, I go in with a mindset I'm ready to learn too. And I think at USA, they do a great job of bringing coaches that are humble, but yet confident. And I think it's what creates a special room. And they do a great job of that. But I think in mentoring, for me, it's about giving them purpose, letting them have a little bit of freedom. I want them to be them. Like even at USA, they're there for a reason. They're all great coaches. I want them to use their voice and feel comfortable with that. Within that, though, we do have goals and verbiage that we want to use and connect with these kids. But I think the coaches that understand they're always learning, always willing to learn, bringing great energy. Those are the guys that you love to work with. And I think those are the special coaches.
You mentioned one of the things to me is that moving away from result-driven performance evaluation. So talk to us about that a little bit.
I think it's hard to coach. I don't care what level. I think it's really hard. And I think early in my career, I was hoping to win championships. I was hoping to have success. At the USA level, you hope to win a gold medal. But I think what ended up happening was I'd win a game and it'd be a relief. I wouldn't even enjoy it. And if I lost a game, I'd be in a state of depression for like weeks. And that's just not sustainable. It doesn't make you a good coach, to be honest. And so what I started doing was just trying to really focus on the process and really buy into that. I really embrace every minute with my kids and with my coaches. And the results will take care of themselves. Yeah, do I want to win? Heck yeah. But if I focus on the other stuff that I control, I think it's made me a happier coach and a better coach. It was funny. I lost a game and it was like a 15-year-old made a bad choice. I'm like, my happiness is going to be dictated by a 15-year-old, or my happiness is going to be dictated by an official that made a bad call. Like, I can't control that, but I can control my preparation. I control how I interact with every kid. I can control my actions. And so when I did that and shifted that, I just think I've been happier. I also think I have a much greater sense of gratitude, and that's made me happier. Just gratitude for life, gratitude for being in the role I'm in. And I think the more we can gravitate to gratitude, I think for me, it's given me like a better inner peace.
Great advice for all of us. And coach, I do say, coaches, if you have a chance to ever watch Coach Fish coach, one of the things that will stand out is language. So just hit that home again for us, the importance of sticky language, the importance of effective language.
Yeah, I think we talked about language a little bit before, but I think one other thing is you got to have your own basketball language. And your players have to know that. They have to know the glossary of words. And so I know in my program, like my seventh graders are hearing the same verbiage they're going to hear when they're varsity kids for me. And I think that's just really important. And I think at USA over the last probably like 8 or 9 years, we've really got a glossary now of words that have meaning, not only for us, but all the way up to our Olympic team as a whole. So we have consistency and we have a Fairport basketball language at my home school. But I think you've got to have a language that everybody knows and understands. Otherwise, I think you're missing the boat a little bit. So it's just one thing I think that I've found great value in over the last probably 9 or 10 years.
Maybe just as a last question, I've talked to a lot of older coaches who've been in the game a long time, like us, and a lot of them are having a harder time adjusting or just wrapping their minds around how the game is or how players are nowadays and all that. Do you have any advice in general to coaches that have coached for a while and then still being able to sustain this type of energy and this passion for the game?
Again, I feel like I've been copying myself on this. When you connect with kids, it's always different. The thing that drives me is my kids. Like, so I'll do whatever I need to do to learn the game or teach the game in a way that impacts them in a positive way because I care about them. And I think the coaches that have been in a long time, they have that care and that passion for their kids. But then we got to be willing to change. At the high school level, every year I have to change. I can't recruit kids at my high school, so I can't fit to my system. I have to coach to what our strengths are that year. Some years it's speed, some years it's guard, some years it's bigs. So I feel like your coaches that have been in a long time, they're used to adjusting. And I think that the ones that are happy embrace that change. Whether or not you want to shoot threes all the time or have no post or whatever, for me is dictated by the team. Whether I'm at USA or at high school. USA, we have a little bit more control because we can pick our team. However, if my most talented kid is a big, then I've got to adjust a little bit on that. So I think for me, it comes back to the kids, and that drives me. And I think all your coaches that are in it for the right reasons are in it because of that. And they'll adjust and learn as much as they have to.
Great insights, great advice, great job for you. Congratulations on all your success with USA Basketball and your long sustained coaching career as well, and all the impact that you've made on so many players and coaches, including myself, coach. Thank you so much for all you do.
Appreciate it. Feelings very mutual. Thank you for all you've done for us too. Thank you.